grab your Bible, head over to Matthew 17. That's going to be our Bible reading this week as we continue through the Gospel of Matthew in the first part of 2025. And this week we're up to chapter 17 and, what, three stories mainly?
Yeah, three major stories with an important interlude.
In this segment, we begin with the dramatic transfiguration. That's first 13 verses or so.
Right.
And then at verse 14, we have the demonic that the disciples could not cast, or the demon they could not cast out. And then we have the fish paying the taxes, I guess.
If only we're that simple in April.
Appropriate reading for April. We planned that all along. So anyway, and more importantly, the broader connections of this collection to the gospel story as a whole. So let's start with those first 13 verses, talk a little bit about the transfiguration. I think typically recognized as kind of a big deal, and at the same time, I think for a lot of disciples, kind of a mystery of what all is going on here and what's its significance to the story.
So, I think the story itself is fairly familiar probably to a lot of us who are reading it, and we're familiar with, it's letting the, Peter, James, and John see a bit more who he really is in a spectacular way. The fact that it happens on a high mountain, as the text calls it, emphasizing kind of a mosaic, Sinai, kind of,
right.
And Moses and Elijah show up, the great witnesses, the lawgiver and the great prophet of the covenant, so to speak, kind of symbolically on the high mountain, handing off the baton, bearing witness to the one to whom that they, were pointing the whole time. And especially because, you had Elijah who is to come, and, and so John the Baptist. So there's a lot going on there,
right,
with Moses and Elijah showing up as well. And again, the cloud, the voice from the cloud, my beloved son. But yeah, in the context, here's the thing. So last week we were reading chapter 16, and this first great, not so much for the crowds, but for the disciples to begin to really understand.
Great confession.
What does it mean when you say he is the Christ? What does it mean when you say he is the Messiah? And when Jesus, had said, so I'm going to go be crucified and raised, and Peter's, choking on that. The chapter 16 ends with the whole take up your cross, follow me, and so forth. And that cryptic line at the end of verse 28, that there are some here who will not taste death till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. And so, part of then what happens in chapter 17 is, in all these stories, are continuing to work out aspects of helping the disciples or select groups of the disciples come to a deeper understanding instead of arguing with what it means that he's the Christ. And so step one here, give him a little bit of a taste, a vision of, underneath the flesh, who is this guy? And he's God on top of the mountain. He's Yahweh on top of the mountain, testified to by Moses and Elijah. And then, of course, even the way that story ends, realizing that the Elijah has come, John the Baptist. So again, you kind of that little riff off of the original Elijah and the typological Elijah of John the Baptist who's come, who has died.
Yeah.
And so also now you have that whole take up your cross and follow me, I will go and die, hanging over it as well. So connecting the death, the suffering with the manifestation of who Jesus is as Peter, James, and John get this remarkable experience.
It kind of when you put the package together and get all those pieces into one story, it illustrates how messy faith is sometimes.
It's a struggle. It's a struggle to faith.
Yeah, and that's that. It doesn't get any more remarkable than what you see with Peter.
Right.
One moment you are the Christ, the next moment you don't have this right.
You
don't know how this is supposed to go. And
right.
As an outsider looking at that, you're thinking, "Come on, can't he see that?"
Right.
Because it's always easier to judge the actions of other people.
Right.
How many people would look at our life if they could see bits and pieces of it and say, "Wait! You're doing that on Sunday, and then you're doing this on Monday.
Right.
How does that work?"
Right.
And I think it is kind of the messy way faith is. Not in any way justifying the moments of weak faith. Jesus doesn't give them a pass on that.
But explaining how it happens.
But it is the reality I think what's happening in their process is they are strengthening their faith.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the glimpses are there. They're putting it together, and yet it's still a struggle for them. And so you get into 17 in the first part of this. You have this dramatic event that you would think would contribute significantly to making this rock solid.
Right,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we get the weird story that follows him.
Oh, the boy with the demon?
Yes. And the struggle to cast out the demon. Yeah. So the struggle's back in the story.
Yeah, and the real issue of this story, especially in this place at this time, is it's not about a demon needing to be cast out of a boy. It's about the fact that the disciples couldn't do it, and Jesus, you know, chalks up to their lack of faith, their struggle with faith. And so that's the issue. And of course, then when Jesus is, you know, cast the demon out and they come to Jesus privately, why couldn't we do it? Because of your little faith. You know, all you need is a mustard grain's worth of faith. And so in the context, again, it's their struggle to accepting who Jesus really is. You know, earlier on when it was just, you know, open the possibility he's the Messiah, that's one thing. Now that he is beginning to more concretely and specifically and tightly define what it means that he's the Messiah, ironically, their faith's gotten weaker. You know, the analogy I think of is like when you go to the gym or you're working out with weights and you get to a certain point where lifting a certain amount of weight gets relatively easy.
Right.
And so you put a little bit more weight on, but now you're struggling to do as much with it. You know, they were doing fine with accepting Jesus as the Messiah until chapter 16 when Jesus says, and that's what this means, you know, and now they're back to, it's like putting a little bit of extra weight when you're lifting. Now it's hard again. And so now they're back to, in a sense, a weak faith. They're struggling to internalize and accept who he is. And so again, you know, then you have the taste of it. That's why immediately following that story is then Jesus again reiterating this is, you know, that's
22.
Why. This is, you know, and so the next set at the gym. I mean, you know, here we go again. So let me now, as you're struggling with your faith between, you know, the transfiguration and this, let me again reiterate, this is who I am.
And I think it's interesting in 23 that the response is different this time.
Yes.
Because with the first one in 16.
Yes.
Peter's response is, that's not going to happen.
Right.
And yet here the response is, they were grieved.
Yes.
So maybe a little progress we're seeing?
From explicit disagreement and disavowal to now, you know, they're not arguing with it. They just, you know, it makes them sad or frightened.
I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, but, you know, they're upset, but they're not argumentative about it now.
Right, yeah. So it is a process.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And maybe we should learn to be patience with ourselves and patient with others as we go through that process of trying to grow and strengthen our faith. But maybe there's a new convert point to be made there too.
Absolutely.
I mean, that just came into my mind, but you know, sometimes, you know, I think we expect new converts to have it all together.
Right.
And are shocked by their failures, but you know, they're new converts.
Right.
And it grows over time.
Right. Absolutely.
All right. So then we have the taxes and the fish.
Yeah.
In 24 to 27.
And so again, same type of
thing. Which is just kind of a weird story.
Well, it is. It is. It is. You know, but again,
not a lot of sermons coming out of this one.
No, but it's a fun story. I actually like this story, short as it is.
There will be a sermon next Sunday by
that's
Jeff.
That's right. Putting that one in the pile to be worked on. But no, in the context, you know, again, you know, we get the story straightforward, even if it's often forgotten. But in the context, you're dealing again with the issue of identity of Jesus, because the real issue is not they got a coin from a fish, the miracle is cool, even though it is that. But the issue is, you know, the question about why is Jesus not paying the taxes? And you'll notice, you know, that Jesus responds by asking Peter, what do you think? Who has to pay taxes? The kings, or their sons, or the people who aren't that others,
strangers.
And Peter, who's been arguing back in chapter 16, helping Peter understand who Jesus is. Well, the sons don't have to pay taxes; others have to pay taxes.
Right.
And Jesus says, "Just so." And so, even though in a sense, you know, give this to them, you know, for their sake, and you know, and for me and for you, he does pay the tax, but he doesn't in a sense because he is God. He just basically, it's all his stuff. And so he just, you know, miraculously, you know, like you know, God having a great fish ready for Jonah, has a fish, you know, when Peter casts for it, a fish that just happens to have the exact change in his mouth, you know, available to pay the tax, which, you know, yes, Jesus technically paid the tax, but it was more to keep the issue off the table, but it was also to show Peter, yeah, I really don't pay taxes. I have fish for that. You know, my creation will bring me what I need when I need it. So it's a remarkable story in that sense, but to show Peter who he is.
Yeah, and I'm almost wondering, is there do we hear echoes of this authority lesson that really runs through the whole book, reminding us of who he is?
That's great.
I mean, we don't find the word authority here, but it is the same kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, even the fish, you know, the winds and the wave obey him, the fish. And when he needs exact change, creation's got him. I mean, you know, it's just it is a remarkable story in that regard. But Simon, it's directed to Simon, it's directed to Peter. Peter, you know,
yeah,
who am I? Who
now
am
we're threading
I?
Back to 16, right?
Yeah.
which is why that break between 16 and 17.
Always in the wrong place.
Well, at some point, they're all in the wrong place, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it all flows together.
Yeah, we should just read it 2 hours straight and just keep it all together.
Yeah. All of it in 2 hours?
It depends how fast you read.
Yeah, I know. It depends on how fast you read. The fish story might be a great story for parents.
It'd be a fun BBS story some year,
yeah,
too.
To talk to the, well, you know, we want parents to bring their kids into Bible reading, and this might be a good a good story to discuss before bedtime prayers.
Yeah.
You know, about
it's
how
memorable.
It's well, and it's all Jesus.
Yeah.
And so that applies to everything in this world now, and it applies to you, which I think is such an important lesson for young people to understand today, because the world teaches them it's all about you and doing things your way and having
right.
it your way.
Right.
When in reality, I belong to God.
Right.
And my life is about letting him have it his way.
Right.
So all creation is subject to him. So some things to think about this week as you're working through chapter 17. And remember, if you have any questions for us, we're happy to go back and grab those and review in future podcasts. So please pass those along if you need some help with your reading.